What is social responsibility? A standard that verifies your students' ability to respond to the lead, to respond to a set of obedience skills, as well as your students' ability to navigate liberty. The lead is really important because you want to take your dog out everywhere you go with them, so they've got to be able to not pull you around and not pose a risk to themselves or to you. The obedience is really important because what if you can't get to a place with your dog? Then you've got to be able to down your dog, walk away, be out of sight, do whatever it is without your dog freaking out. To be able to handle liberty means to be able to take your dog into a place that you want to go to and that they enjoy being at without freaking out. And that's the beauty about social responsibility. That's what we're going to look at today. I'm going to review our performance at the social responsibility test recently hosted by GRC Sydney. Let's get into it.
Okay, so be such a Mally.
Hey, I'm Stu. Teaching your dog anything should be fun as well as purpose-driven. They're not mutually exclusive. Join me on this podcast as we find out more about that. One of the things that I noticed most competitors doing, in fact, I think every competitor except for Muggins here, was using a 6-foot lead. They were using the maximum range lead for the social responsibility that they could get away with. And there's some really good advantages to that. And if I would have been a little bit more strategic and more point-oriented, then I probably would have gone and done the same thing. But the 6-foot lead, why is that better for you in the social responsibility test? It has extra range. What that extra range allows to happen is not your dog to range away from you and walk at the extent of that 6-foot lead, 6 feet away. That's not that great for you. You're probably going to get some deductions for that later on. But what it allows you to do is basically feather in the slack into your anchor hand. And then whilst you're doing your figure eights, as you're going around to do a right turn around the object, your student is probably going to come behind you or range out a little bit further. And the slack you can now feather that out of your hands so that your student then always has a slack lead. And as they get closer to you, you can loop that back in. So when you're doing your left turns, your student is now on the inside of the turn. Again, now you can loop slack into your lead. And as you come out of that turn, you can feather that back out. So what's then happening is you are able to take on board how much tension or slack is in the lead at any time when you're doing the leash obedience. And this is really critical. See, what I did is I started with a 4-foot lead because all of my training is done on a 4-foot slip lead. And again, I wasn't really point-based. I just wanted the pass. And when I think back on it, I really should have gone for the points and tried to get as many points as I can. Why? Because I'm increasing the clarity of the picture that is being expected of the student. I know what I want. Codes can't read my mind. And I noticed that some of the training, as far as points are concerned, that a bunch of the training kind of, it didn't perform as well as I'd expected. There's a bunch of reasons for that. We're going to talk about those sorts of things. But if I have a 6-foot lead, I can basically, I can loop it into my hands when my dog is closer, and I can feather it out when they're a little bit further away. And through that, I can maintain constant tension. So let's get into it. I've just got this on my laptop as we're going through. Now, as soon as you cross the line in SR, then the points are being scored, right? So you've got to come up and you've got to be able to have some sort of loose lead walking skills. Heel is perfect for that because it teaches your student to walk quite close to you at your left side, allowing you to keep a relatively short lead. And if they decide to go and range away, you can feather that lead back out. As you're greeting the three strangers, it is important that you have some sort of interaction with them. Whether that's a fist bump, a handshake, you're interacting with them, not just walking past them. And on my last interaction, I don't think I interacted long enough. I probably would have deducted points for that. I'm not sure. I didn't see the scorecard, so I can't tell you whether I got points deducted or not. But that went well. So the idea of the greeting strangers is that I am able to advocate for my dog. I can prove that if they go to touch my dog, I can tell them no. Generally speaking, there's no contact between dogs anyway. And that the people are remaining neutral and you will get as close as you can. If, for example, you can't get close enough, well, you know what you need to work on. From there, then you continue the lead skills section, and this is where you're going through your figure eights, and you're going to do three figure eights around some object, whether that's posts, poles, buckets, it doesn't really matter what it is, but it's some sort of an inanimate object. You can't get tangled, you can't hit tension on a lead, that's where your 6 foot lead comes in. I had a 4 foot lead, and in looking at the other competitors, I realized whilst I usually have my anchor hand at my belly button, I'm gonna have to play with that so that I'm not putting codes under tension for too long. It's a pretty hot day. Codes were starting to get a bit nervous in the van. So by the time we come out, she was a little bit subdued. And I wasn't really, I mean, she did what she needed to do. I did what I needed to do. Everything worked out okay. I had minimal tension on the lead. In the video, you'll see that I kind of had fingers away from the lead so I could kind of display, hey, minimal tension on the lead. This is guiding pressure. I'm not telling her what to do. I'm not using it like a rudder. And that worked out okay. She followed the lead. That's the point of that. And when I'm training it, it's that your student is following you. And for the purposes of the SR, the student can just follow your left leg, sweet as. But the idea then being, if I need to use the lead as a steering wheel in that instance, I can. It should be minimal pressure, job done. And that way you're not losing points. And if you are kind of gashing points, it's not going to be too bad for you. The next section of the SR1 is what's called a verbal obedience, or just the obedience section. And what we're doing here is we're making sure that we've established a certain amount of skills in our students that are under verbal command. Right? So they're under stimulus control. And this one used to actually be really hard for codes. This is where I thought she was actually going to fail. So I started her off in a sit. Then I moved in front of her on a predetermined point. The judge then calls you to get your dog into a middle position. That's with your dog facing the same direction as you in between your legs. Once you've achieved the down and you've stowed your lead, your student is on the long line. The ideal picture that GRC wants to see is a Sphinx down. What does that mean? Imagine if you just were to get your student just to fold back into a down, their feet basically don't move, their thighs are up around their hips, their legs are straight out in front like the Sphinx in Egypt, right? Now, what we want to see in all things GRC related is a student that is displaying enthusiasm, they can deliver effort, and they stay on task. They're executing what they're doing. You will lose points if your dog shows signs of aversion, avoidance, or suckiness about them. Even though they may do the thing, what GRC is also testing is, have you trained to a high standard? And dogs don't lie. If your dog looks crap doing it, they have not enjoyed a good experience. Now, that being said, you may have a case where your student literally is a bag of nerves. That's okay, that's part of the journey, and trialing until you start to whittle away at the refined things and getting closer to that stylization, it's actually beneficial for you because your student is becoming better and better at performing, which is preparing them for real life without those negative detrimental feelings. Now back to the down. When you step away from your dog, make it different to how you would start any walk. If you're training with me, our walks always start left leg leads, always, forever. The left leg remains a cue for our dog throughout the entirety of their life. Left leg leads. So what happens then when you've downed your dog and you take off with your left leg out of habit like I did on trial? Trials have this weird thing going on called adrenaline dumps. What happens is the more adrenaline is going through you, the less you're able to actually strategically think. And I managed to catch myself out. Normally what I would do from the down is I would step off with my right foot and instead of going straight ahead, I would actually veer off to the right a little bit. That becomes a visual cue to your student, stay in this position. If I take off with my left leg, that is actually left leg leads, that's a signal to your dog to get into the heel position or into the middle position and walk with you. So that's something to be aware of when you're handling, is that your handling must also reflect your dog's capacities and abilities. And if you start mixing the signals up, your dog is gonna make some mistakes and you're gonna get more frustrated, more adrenaline, more mistakes, and it turns into a sucky situation for everybody. Don't worry about it, practice these, video yourself, and constantly refine those habits that come from your side of the bargain. So I actually took off with my left foot, realized what I was doing. Again, we all fall on habits, right? But then what I did is I veered off to the right and I had my left leg go over Code's shoulders. That was enough of a signal for her to go, he's veering right, don't worry about it. What happens then is you're around about 8 meters away, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, depending on the trial situation. But from memory, it's supposed to be like 8 meters. And a neutral dog is then presented. So there'll be a dog in a crate somewhere, they're called out. You're at a distance beyond the range of the long line. So if your student does break and goes after the dog or whatever, Codes did that in our mock trial. She got up and I had to re-down her. She got back into the down, we were gold. In this instance, she didn't do that this time around, and that's the point where I thought she was gonna fail. I expected her to get up. So when I approached, because I was expecting that as my fail point, I did a nice big veer, and I positioned myself, so if we start at a 12 o'clock position, by the time I've greeted the dog, I'm now at 9 o'clock. I've basically done a 90 degree turn to my left. Why? So that as I am feigning interaction with that dog, that neutral dog, and you must touch them, you must pat them, you must interact with them, I can still keep my eyes on Codes, and as soon as she looked like she was about to break, I would have repeated the down command for her. We would have lost points, but not as many points as her getting up, leaving the down, coming over and breaking the silhouette that she's supposed to have. Like, once you've downed your dog, they have to remain within that silhouette. If they break that silhouette, you're losing points. Worst case situation, that's a disqualification, and I did not want to get disqualified. Codes has put way too much hard work in that. But I encourage you to go and look at the video. If you're watching this stoked, you can watch it with me. Codes never breaks the down. She doesn't even fidget. And this is a huge thing for Codes. I expected her hips to flip. I expected something to happen. I expected her to be in some manner tempted out of the down by what had happened. But she was cool. Next is an out of sight stay. So both of these are social temptations. On the one side, you have a student who is locked into an obedience command while you have a social interaction with someone else. If your student suffers from a bit of FOMO, that's going to show up. Then you return, you kind of hang around the area for a little bit. I think it's a 2 minute duration of the down. You spend some time with the dog, it's about 30 seconds. You spend some time out of sight, that's 30 seconds, and you come back on the field, and again, your student must remain in that down. Then there's another temptation that is presented, and in this case, it was a prey temptation. So a flirt pole was brought out, and the judge is waving the flirt pole around, trying to entice the student out of their down. The choice point is, hey, do I go and have fun with this, or do I wait for my handler to come back to me? Now imagine that in real life. Hey doggy, come over here so I can put you in the back of my van and take off. No thanks, I'll stay here and I'll wait for my owner to come back and pick me up. Now what you will see as soon as this flirt pole comes out is that Codes takes her eyes off of the judge and she just stares straight at me. That's the support she needs. So I've made myself quite neutral. In training, I will take a typical stance with my hands hanging down, my feet around about shoulder width apart, and it has stood like that because that's a visual cue that something is going on to Codes. That means something to her. And in a time of crisis for her, like, gee, I really want to go over, the judge has got this flirt pole that she's whacking around and I really want to check it out, Instead, Codes looks at me for the support, is able to then, by my positioning, avoid the judge directly and not look at her. But as soon as the judge turns around, Codes leaves me and looks directly at the judge and is checking out what she's doing. Why? Because her back is now turned. That's what Coda did. Instead of breaking the down, is she chose, I need support. Dad, where are you? I need to focus on you. And as soon as she was keeping the judge in peripheral vision, as soon as the judge turned around, Codes could check her out and go, man, that was really hard. What is it that you're doing to me? The next phase, still within the obedience section, we've had our middle, we've had our pivots, we've had our down, we've had our temptations. Now comes a recall, the front. Now, I'll be honest with you, I was devastated at how Codes did. Now, I realized that she was starting to get shaky with that hold down. It was a lot harder for her than I expected, but she put a lot of enthusiasm and she delivered a huge amount of effort into that down that we simply cannot perceive. I'm stoked with how she did with the down. She exceeded my expectations for it. And in the video, you can, like, you listen to this commentary, watch that video, watch it in review, and look, it's spot on. She's doing a great amount of work. Now, here's where things started to unravel here, and I was actually really disappointed, and I thought we were going to fail based upon this next phase. Usually, when we're training, I've got sunnies on because we train outside, and I've got probably 10 other dogs around us, all doing other stuff, all competing for the food that's in my hand, and I've got to shoo them away to be able to keep Codes with me. But because she's socially quite competitive, she will then push in further to me, except in our last session, and I missed it. In our last session, she was half an arm's length away from me. And that was telling, and I should have picked up on that, and I didn't, I just took it for granted. So in the trial, what happened is, Codes comes up, and instead of being half an arm's length away, she's now a full arm's length away, and that's a big deduction. So I'm pretty sure that would have been a 5-point deduction. So the reason why that happens is, if you recall your dog, they've got to come to you, not just be in the same postcode. It's also an indication that for some reason, you're telling your dog to come over to you. They do come, but for some reason, they don't come close enough. That is showing you that there is some avoidance between you and your student. You are simply not on the same page. Now, here's my reasoning as to why Codes performed like that. And it's completely me. Usually when we are training, there's a bunch of other dogs that she needs to push through. I was using those to classically condition that push through. But I've also usually got sunglasses on because we're training out in the sunshine. Now, stupidly, what sunglasses allow you to do is just have the pervy eyes and stare at your dog the whole time. And that's a habit that we all need to get out of, because that is actually a form of pressure onto your dog. And it's not the type of pressure that we have worked through, because I've got sunnies on right now as I'm recording this. I've always got sunglasses on. But when you take those off, the full pressure of your eyeball is now upon your dog. And as Coda is coming over to me, I'm looking at her going, man, you're slow. And there's obviously little cues that are being sent out by me that I am unconsciously delivering that are showing my displeasure in the amount of enthusiasm that she's putting into this recall. So she goes, you are staring at me with hard eyes the whole time. I am not coming up next to you. Something is amiss. So we lose points for that. She still did the thing. And what happens after that is you take a step backwards, and Coda is supposed to follow you. So as I step backwards, she then comes with me and gets a little bit closer. And I've picked up on, oh, dude, I'm staring at her. Try and stare away. Look at her tail. Look at her paws. Exactly the same thing I tell my clients all the time. Stop perving on your dog. Look at their paws. Look at their tail. Don't look at them at all. Those are your three options. Stop staring at your dog. Stop putting them off. So then we had to do the pivots, and the pivots have always been something terribly difficult for Codes. For whatever reason, I could get her to do them in a training environment, but come trial day, it happened in the mock as well. Nah, it just didn't happen. So you turn on your axis and your student is supposed to maintain their position relative to you. So I have to use my hand and get her into position. And then you're supposed to do a pivot to the right, and she just kind of walked up and she was now perpendicular to me. Again, I am hemorrhaging points for this, and I thought, she's showing that she doesn't know what to do. And I was concerned that we were going to get disqualified. But we didn't get disqualified. We were allowed to continue. Awesome sauce. Now we have the liberty section. The liberty section really is about you doing your thing, your student doing their thing. You are both more or less in the same chapter. You don't need to be on the same page. There will be times where you may decide to give some input to be able to keep your dog socially responsible. The stylization does not trump real life. Now, Codes is pretty good with liberty. If I'm just standing there, she's just gonna hang around and not do terribly much. It surprised me that she did go away and she did have a bit of a sniff, but I don't care. She can do what she wants. If I need to, I could call her back to me. I could give her some indication that I'm going this way. I can use spatial pressure and walk away and she will come with me. That spatial pull is what I could have used. And she would have come with me, but you're supposed to prove that you are able to navigate life while staying in the same chapter of the same book. You can't just sit down, pat your dog for 2 minutes. So liberty is basically 2 minutes of you guys not doing terribly much. There is no leash control. There is no verbal control. This is all your student displaying good choices. So what I tended to do was I moved around at somewhat regular intervals. I didn't want to be terribly busy with my body. I didn't want to present the same picture. So I would rub my hands, I put my hands on my hips, I put my hands in front of my body, I put my hands behind my body. Just little things to keep things going, but they kept things going and they kept Codes more or less in tune with me. Until I folded my hands, and then she's like, you're here for a while. And then whatever happened, Codes picked up a scent and she tracked the scent across the hard floor and she just kind of did her thing for a little while and she wasn't paying attention to me anymore seemingly. But she's not making bad decisions. She has a range that she can go to. She's on the long line. She's not allowed to pull the long line. She's allowed to investigate the area around her. She's allowed to approach the judge. What she's not allowed to do is get up off the ground and interact with the judge. She's not allowed to be belligerent or defensive around the judge. She's not allowed to be pushy, those sorts of things. Just make good decisions and hang out. And Codes can do that. So again, I would encourage you to look at this video and you can go to the Barefoot Paws discussion group on Facebook. This is going to be uploaded. You can watch the whole 7 odd minutes. How did we do? We passed. At the time of recording, I haven't actually chased up my score. In the mock trial, we got 81, and I really want to find out what our score was because we got some massive deductions on not hitting the sits in our default position, and our pivots really sucked. Right, so, our recall, that's easily fixed. We're on that now already. But the pivots, they were really, really sucky. She needs to at least move with me. She's got to show that she understands what her role is in that team effort. So that's really the social responsibility one in review. Thanks for listening to the episode of the social responsibility one in review. I'm super grateful that you hung around. And I'd encourage you, if you have desire to go and pursue this, do so. Don't think about it. Start it now. Look up GRC on the web. Look up a GRC club near you and start training today. Any training is better than no training at all. If you're so inclined, you can get in contact with me at admin@barefootpaws.com.au. I'll help you. I'll be able to get you on the right path. I'll be able to support you through your journey. Not a problem. Again, thanks. Don't forget to subscribe, like, rate, share, comment, tag, do all of those good things wherever you've seen this, just so that other people that you know need to see this or might want to see this, that they can. And you're just helping out a small business guy too, doing your thing to help spread the good word. Thanks, guys.